Blog Talk Radio.
This is Leadership Radio. Leadership Radio is sponsored by Cox Business Consulting. This is Tom on Leadership.
And I'm Tom Cox, your host for Tom on Leadership here on Leadership Radio. Thank you for tuning in for another episode. This week's episode is on the leader's role in building a marketing and sales process. And we're very pleased to have two extremely talented and qualified folks to help us understand this important challenge. And before I introduce our first guest, I want to tell you a little bit about the where I'm coming from with this. It's easy, if you've ever done it, to go over to your friend's house or visit your friend's place of work and see, wow, you're really not doing this right. You really could be better this way or that way. When someone's selling to you, you can see all the flaws and all the holes in the way they're doing it. And then when it's your turn to do the marketing and do the sales, you feel blind and powerless because suddenly nothing looks good or everything looks good. You've lost perspective and, well, the stakes are higher. It's very, very hard to know if you're doing it right, and it's easy to get wrong. Marketing and sales are tough things to do. Now, what's your role? If you're the business owner, you're the CEO, you're the senior person, and we're looking to you to set the tone and give the guidance that the people you hire to run sales and marketing are going to follow, what's your role to make sure that this process happens, whether it's a single person business or 10,000 people working there? If you're at the top, you're having some very specific tasks falling in your lap that you have to do to make sure this happens right. And to help us understand, in particular to bring us his unique perspective on this, very pleased to have someone who currently serves as an outside director on the board of several companies. He's someone who's been working for over 15 years exclusively in this realm of understanding how do you get customers. He's the author of It's Not Rocket Science, Using Marketing to Build a Sustainable Business. And his second book is The Secret to Selling More. And I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Mitch Guzet. Mitch, founder and president of the Customer Manufacturing Group at customermanufacturing.com. And Mitch, thank you for coming on the show.
And thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you this morning.
Yeah, I got the chance to hear you address the Commonwealth Club of California, and it was a fascinating presentation. I knew I really wanted you on the show. And I want to start with the provocative name of your organization, because I love the name, the Customer Manufacturing Group. I would love to have a little engine that I could turn on every morning, or maybe I'd let it run overnight, that would crank out customers for me. And it's a great visual. I love it. I want one. And if I understand you correctly, you think I can do that.
Absolutely. We obviously appreciate your connection and fascination with the name. There are a small percentage of people who it rubs them the wrong way. The vast majority either like it or it intrigues them, but they don't know what it means, so it gets a conversation going, which we like. And whether it's fully automated, as some factories are, or whether it involves work on your part that you can't do while you're sleeping, either way, you can build a sustainable, repeatable process that builds loyal, profitable customers on a consistent basis that you can manage and improve. It may not be as consistent as you'd like because customers are random events sometimes. But our belief is that if you look at the creation of loyal, profitable customers as a process, and what you're trying to do with this process is make something, i.e. loyal, profitable customers, that you can use a lot of things that have been proven to work over the last 50 years in other aspects of business and improve your marketing and sales performance.
Well, and certainly I've always been delighted and intrigued by the Six Sigma work, the lean work, some of the process improvement work that's happened over in the manufacturing world to get rid of variation and to bring down costs, to eliminate waste, and when there is a breakthrough, to exploit that breakthrough as much as humanly possible to really, really improve things. And the promise I'm getting, I'm reading between the lines a little bit, I think, in hoping that I can apply some of this process orientation to improving my marketing. And, of course, as soon as I think that, I think, wow, that'd be cool, and I draw a blank as to what that would look like.
Yes, absolutely. And we get a lot of pushback, and in fact, I'm regularly in debates with folks about the whole idea of Lean and Six Sigma and, you know, marketing people are creative, and to try to put them in little boxes and make machines out of them would be a bad idea, and you'll destroy their creativity, and trying to apply these principles to R&D didn't work, and all you're trying to do is automate everything. And that's absolutely not the concept. The concept really is that all business activities are processes, and every activity in business has had process management principles successfully applied to it, except marketing. Even sales has begun to have process applied to it. So the lone holdout is really marketing, and every single business activity has said you can't apply process management to our function. I remember in the early 1980s sitting in a meeting in a semiconductor company where a presentation by process management professionals in the area of manufacturing were explaining to our manufacturing management how you could apply process management to the manufacturing of semiconductors. And our VP of manufacturing at the time said, that crap could work in the automobile industry, but it'll never work in the semiconductor industry. And today, of course, all semiconductor companies that have their own manufacturing use process management principles to deploy manufacturing, because if they didn't, they'd be broke. And we just hit upon the idea that if you looked at marketing and sales as customer manufacturing, that you could simply reuse and reconfigure and repackage proven principles. You have to be careful to recognize that in the customer manufacturing arena, there are a lot of variables you can't control. The biggest one is customers. Customers behave however they want to behave. And it is a problem. But, you know, I was thinking about this morning before our call. If I run a trauma center in a hospital, you darn well.
Yeah, I was just going there in my head. I was thinking, wait a second, these guys who run emergency rooms, they have no idea what's coming in the door in a given moment.
Absolutely, and you can be working on person A, and person B can come flying in the door on the verge of death, and you've got to be able to shift positions. And the last thing anybody would want to believe is that when they entered a trauma center, that the doctors all looked at each other and said, oh, I don't know, what do you feel like doing today? Conversely, you would hope that they weren't so rigid that if the four things they knew how to do and were allowed to do with their process didn't work, that they just, well, okay, I guess you're just going to have to die. So to believe that flexible and adaptable process management can't be applied to marketing and sales simply gives your competitors an advantage, because they will eventually figure it out if you don't.
All right. Well, you've certainly whetted my appetite. Now I want you to give me the connect it for me and show it to me. Yes, indeed. Here's how you do it. Give me some examples so I can have some faith that this works.
Sure. So there are a few high level process principles that we ask people to think about, and probably the top three are constraint theory or bottleneck theory, lean thinking, which used to be called lean manufacturing, and continuous improvement. And continuous improvement is a simple idea that most people catch on to, which is about getting better all the time. And if you get better a little bit every day, pretty soon you're a lot better than the competition. Lean thinking is simply about removing waste, removing things which don't add value. The tricky part in lean thinking in marketing and sales is recognizing that the only arbiter of value is the customer. If you are doing things that your customer doesn't find valuable, they're not going to pay for it. And I have sat in on countless meetings, both as an employee and manager in a company and as a consultant, where people have said that we're going to be able to charge more because this is a value add. And really, when you look at it, it doesn't add value to the customer. It just adds costs for the supplier, and they want to recover those costs. The government imposes all kinds of costs on us. Those don't count. I'm talking about the costs you voluntarily add without thinking about, does the customer care if I do this? So waste is defined as anything the customer doesn't value that's not required by law.
So bottleneck theory is the idea that everything would be infinitely fast if there's not something slowing it down.
That's
so
right.
What's slowing it down the most right now?
Exactly.
And I know for me, I do a monthly newsletter, as so many of us do, and mine didn't come out very regularly because it was so much additional work to write it. And I stumbled upon doing this radio program once a week. I blog about it as soon as I'm done with the show to summarize the main points and to help me really capture in my own mind what I've learned, and also because not everybody wants to listen for an hour. They'd like to browse for 5 minutes. And then once a month, I go back over a month's worth of programming and go, well, that was especially cool. And, oh, my God, everyone, Mitch Guzet, I got to put him in the newsletter, whatever it is. And I throw the newsletter together very quickly. It's always out on time now, and it's a lot less work.
And so you have used all three principles in that one example. You are using continuous improvement to get better all the time. You have removed the waste from the system by being able to repurpose your content, and you figured out that at least for you and for most people who put out newsletters, the number one bottleneck is putting it together. And if we take bottleneck theory even or constraint theory even one step further, the one I like the best, and it's going on in most companies today, which is we're short on sales. You know, we aren't getting the revenue we want. What can we do to increase sales? And the process most companies use to solve that problem is a meeting, and they bring all the people together in a meeting, and the meeting involves however many smart people you got, a flip chart and a marker. And we start brainstorming ideas on what to do to increase sales. And after we've got a couple of three, four flip chart pages full of ideas, then comes the scientific methodology to pick one. And the methodology usually involves what does the boss want to do, what worked last time, or what's the cheapest thing we can try. And what I say to people is, I said, if your factory or your service delivery system failed to produce products or failed to deliver service on time as agreed, and the head of your factory or the head of your service delivery system said, I don't know what's causing the problem. We're going to have a brainstorming meeting, throw a bunch of ideas up on the board, and then pick one and see if that fixes it. You'd fire that person. You'd say, you don't have any idea how to run the activity you're responsible for. Well, why do marketing and salespeople get to get away with it when other people don't?
Because we don't know what we're doing.
Well, I don't want to say that we don't know what we're doing. I'm going to say that for 50 years we've been allowed to drive our business decisions exclusively by gut feel. And I am never going to tell you gut feel isn't valuable, because there's a lot of evidence that it is. But to be driven exclusively by gut feel is a mistake.
Okay. Well, and here I am. That's all I've got right now. What else can I use, and where do I get it?
So, good point. So what everybody has done in beginning to apply process management everywhere is to start by creating a visual picture of what the process is. It's commonly called a process map, and there's lots of techniques and technologies for process mapping. I like sticky notes and a wall, and you simply build a visual picture of the activities that connect the processes together, or the activities together to make a process. One of the things you will find when you do that with a team of people is there are activity A and activity C don't connect together, but you don't know what activity B is. And my friend Rick Hubbard a long time ago told me that the way he solves that problem temporarily is he puts a sticky note on the wall and he labels it MOH. And I said, what does that stand for? He said, miracle occurs here. And until you figure out what's going on, it's an unknown. And we put them in different colors out, obviously, so that they jump out at you. But you get a visual picture of your process. Once you have a visual picture of your process, a couple of interesting things happen almost immediately. It becomes obvious to the most casual observer that there's a lot of steps in that process aren't adding any value. There are steps in the process that literally dead end, don't go anywhere. and there are steps in the process that are missing. Once you have the process mapped out, the next step is to begin to identify what to measure within the process. If you only measure the end of the process, in other words, did we get any orders today?
No.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, the whole idea of a sales pipeline or a sales funnel has been around for a number of years, and that's been a technique that people have used to try to not hold their breath to see if they got any orders and to get some visibility into the process. Well, you can do that with every process, and that's what you need to do. And you don't have to measure it precisely. You have to measure it so that it gives you directional information to help you improve. Over time, you'll get better at measuring it.
So, do you have an example somewhere of a finished marketing and sales process flow map that I could look at?
Okay.
Because this sounds extremely interesting, and I hate to come up with my own on my own.
Yes, right, exactly. So here's the problem, okay? A comprehensive marketing and sales process map for the entire process is huge, and we spent 5 years creating a comprehensive process mapping, a process map or model of B2B and B2C, business to consumer, marketing and sales processes. And as Deming said a long time ago, all models are wrong, some are useful. And ours, we believe, is useful. The problem is that it's generic. In other words, it's a template to help people make sure that their particular process map or process model is comprehensive. For a lot of larger companies that are listening, there's no one person who's going to be looking at the whole thing. And so what I tell people is don't worry yet about a model for the entire marketing and sales process. Map an activity of interest. If you're responsible, for example, for advertising, create a process map for the advertising process, which starts with the demand for an ad to begin with. In other words, where does the input come from that requests an ad, and what is the output of the process? And you might say, well, it's an ad. Well, maybe it is, but maybe somebody thinks the output of an ad is leads or floor traffic. So you have to decide where does the end of the process occur and where does the beginning of the process occur. But rather than trying to create a comprehensive process map for the entire marketing and sales process for your company, start with an activity. And I like to start with activities that are difficult for you. In other words, if your new product launches are not going very well, then map the new product launch process. If your lead management process is not going well, map your lead management process. If your market research process is not going well, i.e. you're not either getting timely research or the research you're getting is not useful or accurate, map that process. Start with small processes and start with things that will be helpful to you, because otherwise it's an academic activity that drives people crazy and they can't figure out why they're doing it.
Right, whereas if it's something that's been keeping me up at night anyway, here I've now got a tool to help me get some understanding of this thing that if I can make it even a little better, I'll feel a lot better.
It's amazing how many quick wins you can get. And in our workshops where we teach people how to do these things, one of the feedbacks that I get from our attendees after they go back and apply it in their company is it starts a conversation that is different than they've had before. Usually the conversation is, who are we going to blame for this or whose fault is it, as opposed to, how do we make this process work and what is this process? And the failure of most processes involves one of two things. Either the inputs that you need in order to do your job well are missing. For example, I want you to create an ad, Tom, for my wonderful new widget. Now go do that, please. Well, first thing you'd ask me is, could you tell me about the widget? Could you tell me about who the target customer is? Could you tell me how it's doing? You need input in order to be able to do that, no matter how great of an advertising brain you are. And then the other problem is at the other end, which is, what am I expecting the output of this activity to do? And if you expect that the measurement is, did I win a Clio or did I win another advertising award, and I expect that it's going to generate floor traffic for my store or leads for my sales force, you and I are going to have a disconnect as to whether or not your work was valuable.
Yeah, I've heard it said that if your advertising agency is winning awards with your ads, you should fire them.
Yes, well, that is a rule of thumb that's been around for a long time. I'm not quite so hard over on that because I don't mind if they win awards. What I really want to know is, did they accomplish my goal? And it's amazing to me how many times there's goal misalignment. In fact, I have a theory that I'm working on a paper on right now that the biggest problem in marketing and sales in any company is that they are not aligned in terms of what they're trying to do. And that's further compounded if you add in an outside agency, whether it be a marketing agency or an advertising agency. Do you have common and aligned goals? And the leader is responsible for making sure that you have common, understood, and aligned goals amongst all of the functions in the company.
Yes, absolutely true. So if I'm CEO and I've got a large organization and I've fallen in love with Mitch Guzet's concept of using process mapping and using the manufacturing improvement techniques that are out there, one of my tasks will be not only let people know, okay, we're going to start doing more of this stuff, and by the way, I expect to know what your inputs and outputs are, and I expect them to align with each other.
Correct. Absolutely. Work. And we start, you know, at the highest level. What's the goal? What are we trying to accomplish? Because people inherently will do the best job they can. But if you tell them that the goal is to take the hill on the left, that's what they're going to work on. And if you really wanted them to take the hill on the right, they're going to take the wrong hill. I heard an expression many years ago I love, which is that the biggest problem with communication is the illusion that it actually occurred.
Yes. Clear communication is a wonderful, wonderful thing when we can get it.
Exactly.
And often we had a guest on just a week or two ago who was talking about teaching people, delegating to them and creating systems and teaching people how to do new things. And if you're describing something verbally and it's not written down, this is for delegating on a well-documented system. If it's not documented, you try to describe it and they go, you understand, they go, uh-huh. That means no.
Exactly.
That means no.
I love that.
And so, yeah, because they don't want to look stupid. You're the boss, and you're, you know, to you it's obvious, and so they feel like to them it probably ought to be obvious. And if it's
it's embarrassing to say no, I don't understand, and it's a whole lot easier to just say yes, I do. And when it comes to marketing and sales, you have to make sure they're aligned with each other, or you're going to be wasting a whole lot of resources. And the evidence of that is happens every time there's a downturn, and that is that marketing investment gets cut in a downturn. It makes no sense to do that. You need more customers in a downturn. You need to work to get more customers in a downturn. That's when you should be investing more to get them, and yet marketing budgets are cut in downturns. When you ask the CEO why, the answer is, I don't know if it was working and we need to cut expenses. And there is the trigger.
Right.
They think marketing is an expense, and you're supposed to think marketing is an investment. And if they don't get any return, they're not going to spend it.
Yeah, and this is the way that if you're in marketing and you don't want to have, you know, your left arm chopped off and then hit a downturn, how do you demonstrate value? Well, you measure it and you show that you're in alignment with sales and you're producing leads, and here's the evidence of that, and here's our continuous process improvement. And suddenly, you're a transparent box, not a black box, and you're clearly adding value to the organization. And you can show, hey, if we, you know, doubled this activity, we'd increase this output over here, and we'd get more leads into the sales process.
Absolutely. I mean, the reality is most functions can tell you what happens if you cut their budget by 10%. Marketing can't, you know. We have this hope that if you cut our budget by 10%, bad things will happen, so you won't do it in the future. But the reality is a lot of things that happens in marketing have a longer-term effect, and you don't see it until it's too late. I mean, it took General Motors 60 years to go from the number one car manufacturer in the United States to bankrupt. But it didn't happen overnight. They've been on a glide path for 60 years. And it's
from getting worse and worse every year.
Exactly, in lots of areas, not just marketing, but in lots of areas. And the reality is that if you don't start now, you won't be successful. Marketing is the only function in business you cannot outsource. And by marketing, I mean the alignment of your company's capabilities with the needs of your customers, today's needs and tomorrow's needs. It's the only thing you can't outsource. You can outsource sales. You can outsource R&D. You can outsource manufacturing, HR, finance, everything. But you can't outsource linking what your company can do to what your customers need. That's the one thing that gives you a sustainable competitive advantage.
So let's take our remaining 5 minutes and run me through. I'll use me as an example. I do a lot of public speaking. People will come up to me afterwards and give me their business card. They turn in their evaluation, which has sometimes I can read their name, which allows me to get back to them. And you know, I'm not sure that I know I don't have as good a process as I could have to take these touches, these potential leads, and capture them and put them into Salesforce.com, which is what my company uses for tracking leads and sales. There's this mushy, ill-defined area in there. And walk me through what I would do to map that.
Okay. So let's quickly ask you a couple of questions, which is, when you capture a business card, and let's just make it simple and call it a business card.
Yeah.
That business card needs to get entered into your automated system, Salesforce.com. Once it's there, assuming it gets there, what does Salesforce.com, what is it designed to do for you? Not how does it do it, but what is its purpose?
Its purpose is to help me not lose the information that I've already gathered, and if I do something like email somebody, it'll keep track of that for me.
Got it. Now, do you have regular stay-in-touch touches with the people in your database?
Nothing other than the newsletter.
Okay, so you put out a newsletter approximately once a month. Okay.
Yeah.
And everybody in your database that's coded to gets it. So if you don't put them in the database, they aren't going to get the newsletter. Is there any correlation that you've been able to identify between people getting your newsletter and buying from you? In other words, do people buy from you later as opposed to right after they've heard from you? Is it common, for example, for somebody to buy from you or to contact you about buying from you 6 months or a year after they've met you?
Yeah, usually it's within 48 hours of sending a newsletter. They go, oh, yeah, I was good.
Got it.
Tom in my inbox, and I was going to talk to Tom about this.
Got it.
And
they
reply to the newsletter with their question, their issue, their, hey, give me a call, I got this issue.
Perfect. So the reality is the newsletter is doing you good, and you can measure the responses. So the bottleneck, though, if I go back to the beginning, is getting the cards entered into Salesforce.com on a consistent basis. Did I hear that right?
Well, I think they're getting entered in, but I don't think I'm you know, I think I probably could send them immediately a, hey, great to see you. So glad you came to my talk. We'll get you on the newsletter here at the next time it goes out.
Great.
Kind of an email.
And a metric you might use, for example, if you did that, is what is your opt-out rate? Does your opt-out rate go down if you let people know that the newsletter is coming? Because the opt-out rate on the first newsletter they get is what that metric would determine. After they've been getting the newsletter for a while, the value of the newsletter determines whether they opt out or not. But one of the things you might look at is what kind of opt-out rate do you get when they get the first newsletter if you tell them it's coming versus you tell them it's not coming. Also,
right,
if you let them know it's coming, could you trigger somebody to be interested in buying from you sooner? Somebody who heard you speak, thought Tom was a pretty smart guy, and all of a sudden they forget they wanted to talk to you, and by sending them a reminder a week or two later that it's coming, they say, oh, yeah, I wanted to talk to Tom about X, and they don't even have to wait for the first newsletter to trigger that. So I would look at, you know, what are you doing to help the right customers buy sooner? And test some things. You might try sending out other than a newsletter periodically and seeing whether or not that adds or subtracts to the value proposition in terms of the feedback you get from your customers.
Well, we are at the end of our first half hour, and I keep saying this every month, every week I say, the time is flying by, and indeed it is, because we've scratched the surface of a profound set of issues, and we have to let Mitch Guzet go. Mitch, any final words?
I want to thank you very much and to let people know that process thinking is what they need to learn more about, not rigid processes, but flexible, adaptable processes for marketing and sales.
Right. Well, we're going to take a quick musical interlude. I'll say thank you very much to Mitch Guzet of the Customer Manufacturing Group, and his website is customermanufacturing.com, and we'll be back in just a bit with our second guest.